It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. I so appreciate each and every one of you joining us. You are each treasured and valued. You have purpose, my friends, today. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. You were made for this moment. Live with intention. Thank you to this team that I get to work with. That's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, Jen, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. I so appreciate all your good work. Producer Steve, happy Tuesday. Lots of work to do.
Yeah, there is. And I got a little, this is probably not a good habit to get into, but in our pre-call, I start making sticky notes, and I've got like six of them lined up across the board here. I'm not sure it's a good habit or not.
You know what? I'm doing the same thing. And I think that because the packet that Patty puts together, there's so much information there, that when I want to try to get my fingers on one of the stories she has there, I was like, where is that? And so I'm doing the same thing, and hopefully that makes us more effective, Producer Steve.
Well, she, like you just said, she jams so much into one day's worth. It's like she could put it out on Monday. We'd go through the rest of the week with that one. I know we don't want to do that because we got to stay current, but that's how much information is, that we're looking at.
Well, and it's really important, and I appreciate her great work on that as well. So we're going to jump into this. Again, we have such great guests. I am out and about all the time, and people will say, where do you get all of these great guests? Sometimes I think it's a divine intervention because people reach out to us on the national level, the local level, and the shows are jam-packed. We work really hard to bring good content to you. As you know, we search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you should not have to force people to do it. And it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether with a weapon, policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, fear, coercion. The latest one is government-induced inflation. And we're just really blessed with having the great guest that we do. So today, in the second segment, Dr. Jill Vecchio, she's a regular guest. She will be on to give her perspective regarding the Supreme Court's actions on vaccine mandates. And then Phil Kirpin, who is the president of American Commitment, will be on to talk about the COVID hospital data and what that actually has meant. So today will be somewhat of a COVID show. And when we look at our headlines, Steve, there's so much on COVID out there. It's important to try to get to the truth on that. So today we'll be looking at a lot of that, Producer Steve.
Well, I guess the one that caught your eye, and I heard him talking about it yesterday, was this tabulation of what people who lean to the left side would like to do to people who have yet been vaccinated. Is that where you were going?
Well, a whole variety of things. And so we'll talk about that in a little bit. That is an article that merits getting into it a little bit more. So a couple of things before we get to all of that. I want to remind people to go to our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And it is a great website. We have all of our recaps, our podcasts there. We currently, Steve, have been on a 2 business day lag time, just with all the things that we do to get a really good recap and podcast up there. We are going to work to improve that. And so Patty and Zach and I are working on that. We'd like to try to get that to 1 day. You're a part of that, and Keith as well. And so that is going to be our goal, to change that. But all that information is there, our past podcasts, our most recent op-eds, our most recent podcasts as well. And then go and sign up if you are interested in getting some media training. Helen Raleigh and I are doing a workshop on February 19th, and we rolled out the registration on Sunday. And if you're interested, I would recommend that you get that done sooner versus later, because registrations are quite brisk. The price until the end of January is $119.99, goes up to $149.99 after that. I don't think that we'll even, I think we'll be full within just the next few days, at least at the rate we're going, Producer Steve.
Well, I don't want to, you know, belabor it or take too much airtime here, but when I first spotted that, it's like media training. I wonder exactly what does that, can you take 30 seconds to flesh that out?
Well, it will really help people with their messaging in both radio, in print, television, podcasts. It will help people learn how to get through any pitfalls that they might have. If you might have a gotcha moment with a media member, maybe asking you questions about that. It'll really help you become more savvy and have more confidence, because we're actually also going to do some microphone and video work as well. And as Helen Raleigh, she is a rock star. I mean, she grew up in China. She comes to America with nothing. She's created a very successful business. And now she is with the Federalist, a columnist with the Federalist. She's on national media. I mean, what a story. How often can you pick the brain of somebody like that, Producer Steve?
Well, what a great opportunity. So in part, then, it's teaching how to be a better consumer of media?
No. Whether or not you might be a candidate, or maybe you're helping a candidate, it's going to help your candidate, or maybe you have a cause that you're going to want to be out in the media promoting. This will help you do that.
Okay.
And so it's going to be really good.
Okay, got it.
Thank you for clarification. You know, sometimes I have things in my mind. I say it, and I think everybody else understands it. So thank you for pushing me to clarification on that.
Although now that I think about it, teaching people to be better consumers of media and teaching them not to be taken down the garden path might not be a bad thing either.
That might be a good thing as well. And we'll take that under advisement, Producer Steve. That's a great idea. I want to continue on a couple of things. Typically, we don't mention our America's Veterans stories until a little bit later in the week, but we recorded one yesterday afternoon with Betty Cranmer and her daughter, Susan Gorman. Betty is 100 years old. She grew up in Britain. She was there in Britain for the whole Battle of the Britain during World War II. Great interview, and I'm just so excited about it, Producer Steve.
Well, I guess, you know, due to Downton Abbey and other British television, I've been exposed to so much of the British mindset, and my expectations were met in listening to that interview. She is exactly who I thought she would be.
It's great. So that will be 3:00 this Sunday. Don't miss it. Before we get into Bill of the Day, Hooters Restaurants is one of our great sponsors. They have 5 locations. That is Westminster, Loveland, Lone Tree, Aurora, and Colorado Springs. And they have lunch specials. And they're keeping the line on this. This is Monday through Friday, 11 to 2 a.m. They have $8 items, which is Baja fish tacos, a lunch burger, or chicken tenders. They have $9 items, which are shrimp tacos, boneless wings, a chicken garden salad, or a buffalo chicken garden salad, or a Philly cheesesteak. And $10 items are my favorite, which is fish and chips. And they have buffalo chicken sandwich with curly fries and a Western burger with curly fries. And that's for to-go or dine-in. If you want to take that home, you can do that. And they are creating a lunch punch program now as well. So be sure and check all that out on my website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And all my sponsors there, I highly recommend each and every one of them. Let's take a look at this bill of the day, Producer Steve. It's House Bill 22-1025. It was just recently introduced because they just went into session last week. And is the repeal of infrequently used tax expenditures. And as you and I both were going through this, it was kind of clear as mud. There's these different exemptions that were on the books. They're taking them off and probably are infrequently used. The first question is how could the tax code get so complicated to get those things in there? And, of course, one of the reasons is once we get into income tax, and we know big business and big government typically like each other, so there's different exemptions that were put in place. You and I think, Steve, both would advocate for lowering taxes, rules, regulations, getting to a flat tax, fair tax, so that we know what's going on. And in the pre-call, you said, well, that would get rid of a lot of people that are involved in this whole tax preparation and the tax lobbying. But the thing that people don't realize is if we really get this economy humming and people have more money in their pockets for investment or wanting to take a trip or things, then the private sector gets bigger. And so that's why we need to move towards that. But Patty had done a clarification on this, and former State Senator Kevin Lundberg had mentioned that this is actually just a little camel's nose under the tent, an assault on Tabor, because they're, in getting rid of tax exemptions, they're raising taxes. And under Tabor, if you're raising taxes, and PBIs, those politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties, they're raising taxes, they're supposed to ask us. So this is, it's probably more insidious than we actually realize, because they're infrequently used, but they're just chipping away at Tabor. And I think that's the important point that both Patty and Senator Lundberg encourage us to make on this, Steve.
Yeah, I wouldn't question that for a second. And we all know how they feel about Tabor. But when I went down the list of things there, it's like, if you do get your taxes done by a tax accountant, and they understand each one of these items that she had bullet pointed here, they're earning their money. That's incredible.
Well, true. And to that point, Three Points Financial, which is one of our sponsors, they are a fee-only firm, and they help with just the big picture. And one of those things on your investments and your insurance, and they look at all of that, but they can actually prepare your taxes. And as I was looking at this particular bill of the day, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, people need Three Points Financial big time.
That's a nice way to segue into a, you know, someone who supports the show.
Absolutely. Well, for sure, because this is, they make things so complicated that you have to have professionals that help you with that. And again, if we can simplify this, then everyday people are going to have more money for their own investments and their own things that they want to do, their own creating businesses. And that would just blow the economy up in a great way, instead of what's happening now, where it's getting blown up in a bad way. And so, again, the point on this is another camel's nose under the tent to try to take down Tabor. And it's unfortunate. And we, I guess, you know what, we should mention who the sponsors are on this. This is Representative Adrian Benavides, and on the Senate side, Senator Chris Colker. So we want to certainly give the credit due where it goes on that. So let's go to break. When we come back, I want to talk to Dr. Jill Vecchio and find out what she thinks about the Supreme Court rulings regarding the vaccine mandates. And then, of course, in the third and fourth segment, really excited to talk with Phil Kirpin about COVID hospitalizations, how that's been used, what that means exactly. So we'll be right back.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. As most all of you know, there were some historic Supreme Court rulings last week regarding vaccine mandates. I consider it a bit of a split decision because basically they came in and said that this Biden mandate, if employers have more than 100 employees, that they have to mandate vaccinations. Love that. That was struck down. Then over here on the other side, healthcare workers, if you receive Medicaid and Medicare payments, then they upheld that, to my understanding. And of course, they're forcing people into Medicare and they expanded Medicaid. So that seems a bit insidious to me. But I want to find out what Dr. Jill Vecchio has to say about that. You know her. She's a frequent guest on the show. She was one of the few people in America that read the complete Obamacare, Unaffordable Care Act legislation. And we've done a lot of podcasts together as well. Dr. Jill, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
Okay, I considered it a split decision. And Jill, I can't understand if we're all equal under the law, the law is supposed to be impartial. Love the fact that this was struck down on the 100 employee threshold, but the fact that they held it for Medicare, Medicaid is very concerning to me. What's your thoughts?
It is very concerning, and it doesn't make sense. I just read the opinions this morning issued by the Supreme Court justices. And let me back up for a second, too, because people need to understand what the Supreme Court was really doing. The Supreme Court was asked to expedite an opinion on cases that are still being worked through the lower courts. People need to understand that. This isn't necessarily a final decision by the Supreme Court. They did an abbreviated and expedited certiorari or like a review of a case that is still happening in the lower courts. So typically the Supreme Court hears things, and this is my understanding. Typically the Supreme Court hears cases that have already finished going through the lower courts. But because of the magnitude of this and the question of its legal validity, the Supreme Court agreed to expedite it, and they did abbreviated hearings. I think they only heard like 4 hours of oral arguments. So that's not their typical scenario. Okay, people need to understand this is a different scenario for a Supreme Court review. So whatever decisions the Supreme Court made at the end of the opinions, it's interesting. I had to look it up because they're saying now we leave it to the lower courts to essentially finish their cases, and then the Supreme Court could potentially review it again. Okay, does that make sense? I don't know if anybody's talking about that. So, and that's very, very, very important. The other thing is the Supreme Court isn't saying that they agree that the vaccines are necessary. What the Supreme Court, necessary or unnecessary, they are not, the Supreme Court has not ruled on the efficacy or validity of the vaccine at all. All that the Supreme Court looked at in both cases is whether or not that particular agency, whether it be OSHA or CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services under the Health and Human Services Secretary, whether those two agencies, non-elected bureaucratic agencies, part of the executive branch of government, whether they had the authority to issue these mandates. Now, and that's absolutely critical to understand. And it's also bizarre that the one on the OSHA, they had what's called per curiam. It just means an opinion was issued by the entire court, rather than a single judge, because usually you have an opinion that supports whatever the majority opinion was, and then you have a dissenting opinion, the justices who didn't agree with what the majority of the court did, and they both write their opinions explaining why they liked it, why they supported something, and why they didn't like it. And the OSHA one was written, well, both of them have an entire court opinion, but it's interesting, there was a great phrase used on the OSHA case where they say administrative agencies are creatures of statute. In other words, the only reason that the administrative agencies exist, you know, are formed or have any power at all to issue rules and regulations with the force of law is because Congress or some legislative body has passed a law giving them that power. You follow me so far?
I do. And that is something, Jill, that you and I have realized, that this is how representatives have actually abdicated their responsibility to these agencies. And that's how these bureaucracies have grown so much. And then they're unaccountable. And many times I think that electeds, politicians, our PBIs or our politicians, they abdicate that because they don't want to have to go to the voter and be responsible to the voter. And that's one of the reasons how we got into this big mess, I think.
Exactly. And folks need to understand that the vast majority, and they talk about that in these opinions as well, the vast majority of laws under which every American, every business owner, everyone lives, the vast majority of those laws are not laws that were passed by a legislative body. They are, quote, laws. They are rules and regulations with the force of law written by a bureaucrat in an agency that's not part of the legislative branch of government. It's part of the executive branch of government. So there, you know, we are really lopsided in our sense of checks and balances when you have most of the laws are not written by people who are elected to make laws. You know, that's obvious.
And the founders that was never the idea of the American idea.
Exactly. So the Supreme Court ruled on whether or not these agencies had the authority to issue these vaccine mandates. They said OSHA did not, because OSHA can only regulate what happens at the workplace. And what happens at the workplace, so they can't make a rule against or requiring someone to do something that affects them outside of the workplace. Does that make sense? So, and the crazy
yes.
thing is, then at the same time, they said that HHS or Health and Human Services, you know, through Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, that they did have authority to make a rule that affected people outside of the workplace through the healthcare workers. So it's like, to me, they really the two opinions contradict each other. Either.
Well, that's what it seems like to me, too.
And that's what the dissenting opinion said. You know, Alito wrote a dissension, and Clarence Thomas wrote a dissenting opinion saying it doesn't make any sense how you can force a healthcare worker to do something to their body that affects them permanently, that's irreversible, and will affect them outside of the workplace. And then, but then on the OSHA opinion, you said just the opposite. You said, no, an employer can't, or this agency can't require someone to do something that will affect their life outside of the workplace.
So Roberts and Kavanaugh ruled in favor of the Medicare Medicaid mandate. And Kavanaugh, I was surprised. Roberts is very kind of predictable, unpredictable, if you will. But I was a little surprised that Kavanaugh was on that.
Yeah, and it's odd because usually when CMS, Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, and always remember this, whoever's paying for your health care gets to make the rules about your health care. That's really what this is about. The CMS one is essentially saying anybody who gets government money by seeing Medicare and Medicaid patients has to go by our rules. And then usually they'll issue a preliminary rule. If they want to change something that affects healthcare, they issue a preliminary rule. Then they have to wait a certain time period for interested parties, right, doctors and so forth, to comment on that potential rule, on that preliminary rule. And the preliminary rule cannot take effect until a certain comment period has expired, and then they go back and review all the comments, and then they can issue a final rule, whether or not they can ignore all the comments, but that's the process that's supposed to happen. They completely skipped over that with this. They just issued the mandate. They didn't even go through a comment period. And their comment period, I can guarantee you, would have included a whole lot of questions about the validity and efficacy of the vaccine itself. So the Supreme Court did not say the vaccine is great and wonderful and it works. They didn't. And the question to me is, you know, unless you go through that process, how can you mandate something that has not been proven to be efficacious? And so how can you mandate something at that level that you don't even know what the safety of the vaccine is itself? So they're using this threat to the worker, the workplace, the workers are going to be threatened by people not being vaccinated. How about the threat to the workers individually by being vaccinated?
Well, those questions really should be answered. And what's so interesting, Jill, and Patty had pulled this out, so I need to pull, this was from, I don't know if you've seen this yet, there was a Rasmussen poll that just went out, or a survey that just went out. And it was so interesting that how political it is. And it says Democrat voters support harsh measures against the unvaccinated. And it said 59% of Democrat voters would favor a government policy requiring that citizens remain confined to their homes at all times, except for emergencies, if they refuse to get a COVID-19 vaccine. Such a proposal is opposed by 61% of all likely voters, including 79% of Republicans and 71% of unaffiliated voters. In some ways, I find some hope. Steve and I were talking about this before the show, and 59% of Democrat voters, but we realize in Colorado that Democrats are about a third of the voters, unaffiliated, it's about a third, and Republicans are about a third. So that would mean 59%. So let's say maybe 15 to 17% of the voters would actually mandate this. But it's very telling that how political this has become. And we see that the Biden administration and these mandates are really carrying the water for this very small percentage of people in America that want to mandate how other people live their lives. What's your final comment on that, Dr. Jill?
Well, I think what it really tells us is how effective their misinformation campaign has been on COVID. There are plenty of people out there who think if you get COVID, you're going to die. You got a 50% chance of dying. I mean, they are petrified. So their fear-mongering propaganda campaign from Fauci, the CMS, and the people who have a financial and otherwise interest in keeping us afraid so that we'll all get the vaccine, that's what is telling to me is how successful that campaign has been. Because if these folks really bothered to know the truth and bothered to do the research and bothered to listen to your show, right, they might feel totally differently. So it's they are being told to be so afraid that it justifies their anger and their willingness to punish people who aren't going along with the propaganda. And that's, we talked about that with Nazi Germany. That's how Nazi Germany got so many people, got their population to just turn their head, not pay attention to what was happening to the Jews and among other people. But that allowed that thing to happen in Nazi Germany. And I think Japan was very similar, but I think what's scary is how successful their campaign has been.
Well, but I'm encouraged, Jill, with our voices, and there's so many voices out there bringing truth to this. We're one of those that's dedicated to truth and clarity on this. And Dr. Jill, it's always great to have you on the show. I appreciate all the work to delve into these Supreme Court decisions. So thank you so much, and we will have you on very, very soon again.
Okay, thanks, Kim. Take care, everybody.
Okay. So a couple of things before we go to break. First of all, in light of just how much we had in the show, I did not share with you our quote of the day, and it's from G.K. Chesterton. He was an English writer, philosopher, lay theologian, and literary and art critic. He's been referred to as the Prince of Paradox. He was born in 1874. He died in 1836. And I was looking for quotes about truth and light, and this is what he said. He said, "The issue is now clear. It is between light and darkness, and everyone must choose his side." Steve, did you have a quick comment on that?
Well, too bad he's already passed away, because I've been thinking he's been hanging out at the Jen Snarky press conferences.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Before we go to break, we were just talking about Medicare And again, it's government is all over this. When you reach a certain age, 65, I don't quite understand all of it, but you need to know what's going on with that. And Medicare, we're currently in an open enrollment period, I think it is. And that's where you can make a change to your Advantage plan. If you are 65 and older, you need to be talking to Kirsch Insurance Group because they are experts in the Medicare arena. They can help you figure out what is best for you. They work with a lot of different companies here in Colorado. So be sure and check out iKirsch.com. That's iKirsch.com. Set yourself up for success. Knowledge is power. Again, that's iKirsch.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation and we'll talk with Phil Kirpin with American Commitment. And a very important question, how many hospitalizations are really due to COVID? We'll be right back.
Three Points Financial is a fiduciary financial planning company focused on helping individuals and families. Mary Alpers and Steve Kruse at Three Points Financial specialize in investment strategies, tax planning and preparation, and retirement planning with no product sales or commissions. Tax laws have changed and will continue to change. Inflation is real. Three Points Financial helps you maneuver through these changes to achieve your financial success. For clarity and a solid, relevant financial and investment plan, while working with a company that puts your interests at the forefront, schedule a no-obligation initial consultation at threepointsfinancial.com. That's threepointsfinancial.com.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. Very excited to have on the line with me Phil Kirpin. He is the president of American Commitment. And he said one of the reasons that Americans are afraid of the latest COVID wave is that we hear health experts and the media reporting hospitals filling with patients, especially children, who are testing positive. And he's right. That's scary, but he says it's misleading. Phil Kirpin, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be with you.
Hey, this is something that's really important for people to understand. You've done research on it. So explain all these hospitalization numbers, because they are scaring people, I think, to make unreasonable decisions. So what's going on?
First of all, hospitalizations are falling in most of the country now. So that's the good news. They peaked around Thursday or Friday of last week. National numbers are down about 4% since then. And some places are down more than that, the places that peaked first. Major cities like New York, D.C., Atlanta, that have flights to South Africa started first and peaked first and are now declining the sharpest. But the remarkable paradox of this wave, which almost no one talks about, is we saw these steep rises everywhere in the number of hospitalized patients with COVID. The total number of hospitalized patients didn't really move. It was basically totally flat everywhere in the country. And you know, that's pretty hard to reconcile. The media only seems to care about the COVID number. They don't talk about the overall utilization. But it's pretty hard to understand how, you know, nationally in the past 30 days, COVID hospitalizations were up by like 80,000 or something like that nationally, and total hospitalizations were up about 2,000. Well, how does that happen? And, you know, there are a few explanations. One is that there's some surgeries being canceled, things postponed, people maybe aren't going to the hospital with other things, so that's part of it. But I think a really big part of it is what they're calling incidental hospitalizations, which is to say that a lot of people who were already in the hospital for some other reason happen to test positive, just because when you have a highly infectious version of the virus going around, you know, if 20 or 30% of the whole community are testing positive, then the percentage in the hospital is going to be really high also, just because the people who are patients in the hospital are also members of the community and there's something infectious going around. And so the numbers, which drove a lot of scary headlines over the last few weeks, really didn't reflect a rise in acute illness necessarily, or greatly exaggerated the rise in acute illness, because a lot of people just happened to be testing positive, and they have not fixed this in the national data set. They do not give us primary diagnosis COVID, but we do have a few states that report this way. Iowa and North Dakota have been doing it for a while, but New York recently started doing it, and they said half of their so-called COVID hospitalizations were not. It was just people there for other reasons who happened to test positive. University of California San Francisco Hospital says 70% of the patients in their COVID count are not there for COVID. They're there for something else, and they just happen to test positive. And the biggest hospital in Miami, Jackson Hospital, has been putting these tweets out daily, and their numbers are always between 50 and 60% that are totally incidental. And so I really wish that the national data reporting reported what people think they're reporting, which is primary diagnosis COVID, because these numbers they've been giving are almost completely useless, Kim. And what they're telling people is, don't watch the COVID number, watch the total number of people hospitalized, because that tells you if there's actually stress on the hospitals, and there really aren't anywhere. Yeah, I just pulled up the Colorado numbers because Colorado is kind of peaking right now in hospitalizations. In the last 30 days, the inpatient census with COVID in Colorado is up 494 people, but the total number of inpatients in Colorado hospitals is down 208 people. So you've got a smaller number of people in the hospitals in your state, but all they're talking about is that COVID number, which doesn't really tell you anything about hospital stress.
You know, Phil Kirpin, I think that's the big question, and I want to get your take on what is going on, because this is just, it's disingenuous to be putting these numbers out there like that and scaring people. I'd like to go to break before you come back and answer that question. Before we do that, though, Castlegate Knife and Tool is another great sponsor of the show. They are a family-owned business. They are located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. And whether or not you are a chef or a collector or a sportsman, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place for you. If you're shopping for a wedding gift or a birthday gift, again, Castlegate Knife and Tool is a great place to make that selection. So be sure and check them out. Their website is castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation with Phil Kirpin.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Don't miss your chance to hear from the Republican Senate candidates as they go up against Senator Michael Bennet. Longmont Republican Women present a Republican Senate Candidate Forum on Saturday, January 29th at Twin Peaks Charter Academy in Longmont. Doors open at 6 p.m., dinner is provided, and forum starts promptly at 7 p.m. Tickets cost $35 and no tickets will be sold at the door. Our very own Kim Munson will be moderating, so you don't want to miss it. Get your tickets at longmontrepublicanwomen.org today. Once again, find more information and get your tickets at longmontrepublicanwomen.org.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you who support us. We are an independent voice. We search for truth and clarity by looking at these issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you should not have to force people to do that. And one of the important components of all of that is to make sure that we are getting honest, truthful information. On the line with me is Phil Kirpin. He is the president of American Commitment. And he's asked this a very important question. How many hospitalizations in America are really due to COVID? And he said, what we really need to look at is the total number of hospitalizations. And have they gone up or have they gone down? And Phil, before we went to break, you had said that you just pulled the Colorado numbers. I think that's worth repeating, if you would do that. We had a bit, I think, of a challenge on our connection. And so wanted to make sure that we got that taken care of because the information that you have is so important. So again, share that with our listeners, Phil.
Yeah, it looks like the COVID hospitalized number in Colorado may have peaked, but the peak number is only January 14th, so it may not be the peak yet. We'll see as we get through this week. But that was at 1,711 total inpatients with confirmed COVID. That is about 500 more than a month ago. But the interesting thing is that a month ago, you had more total patients in your hospitals. You had 200 more a month ago than you do today. So COVID patients went up by 500, but total patients went down by 200, which is a really weird paradox, although it's actually quite common. A lot of states have numbers that look like that. And then the question is, did they clear out everyone who wasn't COVID to make room? That would be a little strange because you still have a big cushion of unused staffed hospital beds. Or is what's happening, a lot of patients who are already there for some other reason happen to test positive? And that seems likely, but unless the state or the individual hospital systems release the data on primary diagnosis COVID, we don't know because the HHS daily data doesn't ask them that question. They say, what's the total number of inpatients you have who've tested positive, essentially? And they don't differentiate between the people who were there because of severe COVID illness and who were there for some other reason but just happened to test positive.
Well, Phil, I've always wondered this. And again, there's this narrative of so-and-so has COVID. I'm now saying, are they sick or did they just test positive? Because there is a distinction between the two. And Phil, I think if we tested for whatever, say another virus, if we tested the complete population for another virus, I think many people might have something else. I mean, we're constantly, as individuals, our own immune systems, we're fighting all kinds of different viruses. So this testing of everything is a narrative that needs to be flushed out. I think that you're doing that. And also with these tests, I've had Dr. Jill Vecchio and Dr. James Lyons-Weiler on, that we get false positives as well. But this, they then use this narrative to scare the living daylights out of people.
Yeah, sometimes kids are smarter than we are. It's funny, yesterday my son was saying something about a kid who was out of school, and my wife said, oh, does he have COVID? And my son said, no, he just had a positive test.
Good for him. How old is he?
9, yeah.
Good for him.
So, look, I think you're exactly right. And I'm not sure that, right now, if you were testing for something else, you'd find a lot of it because we are in a, we are in a big viral wave with Omicron. It's very mild for the vast majority of people, even more mild than the previous variants. But, if you, in a normal year where you're in a flu peak in February, typically, if you had the kind of intensive testing that we have right now, I think it would yield the exact kinds of numbers that you're seeing right now. Because if you look at, the percent positive rates that we get in a normal flu year in February, they're about what we're seeing right now with COVID. So this is not something crazy and scary and abnormal. It's just the scale of the testing is making it look that way and feel that way. But, there's a lot of evidence that this is actually a relatively minor pathogen, less dangerous than, other possible dominant respiratory viruses. And if you think about it, flu was kind of coming back. We had this resurgence of flu, in particular this H3 flu was sort of everywhere in the country, and it was kind of growing, and it looked like, okay, after a year off, flu is coming back. And then it really declined sharply when Omicron kind of edged it out and became the dominant virus. And I think we need to think in a little bit more perspective, if you're going to have a dominant virus every winter, which you generally do, is it actually worse to have this than to have, a nasty flu? I don't think it is for most people, certainly not for young people. And so this Omicron might be a good news story, not just in that it's weaker than previous COVID strains, but it might actually be a good news story relative to the flu virus it displaced this year.
Well, Phil Kirpin, when we look at what you have brought out here, that in fact here in Colorado, that hospitalizations have gone down, we've done all this testing for COVID, looking over at the public policy side of this, we get over to then the forced vaccinations and all of that, and to be basing public policy on numbers that might be questionable. When you mentioned that hospitals are not required to report hospitalizations where the primary cause is COVID, that seems disingenuous. To me, I have all kinds of red flags going up about this, but I could be talking to some of my friends that may not be paying that much attention. I see onerous public policy here, and it's concerning to me. And there are people that are very trusting of the narrative of the media, of government, and they're like, well, why would they do that? And how would you respond to them with that question?
Well, I think that once you start down a path, it's very hard for institutions to adjust course, unfortunately. And I think what's happened is a lot of people have become bought into this idea of organizing our whole life around avoiding respiratory virus, which hasn't really worked, by the way. About 80% of all Americans have had it at this point, based on the best estimates we have, which tells you we've accomplished essentially nothing, turning all our lives upside down and obsessing and all this stuff. But, you know, now we're at the point where to change and to fix these problems means a lot of people admitting they were wrong, and who likes to admit they were wrong. And by the way, people don't want to admit they were wrong to themselves either. They don't want to admit that they did all this for nothing, they put their kids through this for nothing. A lot of people will never admit that. Just psychologically, they're not willing to confront that. And so that makes it, unfortunately, very difficult to exit kind of the dead end that we've got ourselves into. And that means we keep making it worse. We keep digging the hole deeper.
Okay, that is so interesting. And I talked with Dr. Jill about this. My researcher, Patty, had pulled this recent Rasmussen poll or survey that basically said that there was 59% of Democrat voters are in favor of requiring that citizens remain confined to their homes if they refuse to get a vaccine. They said that they think that the federal and state government should be able to fine or imprison individuals who publicly question the efficacy of the existing COVID-19 vaccines. I think in a way that goes into people not wanting to admit and having the intellectual curiosity to kind of check their premises on that, and therefore would be willing to have use government to punish people that didn't make the same decision. Phil Kirpin, that really is scary to me. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, it should be scary. It's very disturbing, the things we're seeing. Cities that are just wholesale banning people who are not vaccinated from public life, including children. The Salt Lake Tribune over the weekend said the National Guard should basically forcibly keep unvaccinated people in their homes at force of arms. I think they should keep them from going anywhere. The left has really kind of lost their minds on this whole thing. And, you know, I think it's because the public health authorities throughout, from Fauci on down, have told one lie after another. Their whole approach has been tell people what they think people need to hear to behave the way they want them to behave, whether it has any connection to the truth or not. And, you know, they've kind of created this resentment, this paranoia, all of this. And, if they had just been honest, especially about the vaccine, if they had just been honest, you know, this is what the data shows. It does have a significant reduction in risk of hospitalization and death, particularly for older people. If you want to get it, get it. If you don't, don't. But, I mean, this idea that you're going to force people, that you're going to punish people, that you're going to attribute your disease when you get it as a vaccinated person to the fact someone else chose not to, there's no logical basis for it. But, you know, they put these messages out that are designed to influence behavior rather than telling the truth. And by the way, it's a bad way to influence behavior, because what happens is, you know, half the people will follow you off a cliff and do whatever you say, but those are the people who would have listened to you anyway. And now you just alienate all the other people. So I think it's been very, very bad public health strategy from the top has caused this. And I agree with you. It's very deeply disturbing, especially if you live in a blue area where these people have control of the power of government. You know, I don't think you're going to see these things on a national scale, but you're going to see them locally because, you know, there are places where the people in power think that way.
Well, what I find, and I talked a little bit about this yesterday, is I'd seen that in Washington, D.C. Now, are you in the Washington, D.C. area, or where are you based?
Yeah, I'm right. I live right in D.C., so I'm sort of in the heart of darkness. I'm seeing all of this close up.
Okay. So I saw that it was reported that D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser had said that people going into bars, restaurants, et cetera, needed to provide their vaccine card as well as a photo ID. Is that correct? Did I hear? Is that the correct report on that right now?
The mayor's order took effect this past Saturday. Anyone who is age 18 or older must show a photo identification and proof of vaccination to go basically in any indoor venue in the city. If you are between 12 and 18, you don't need the photo ID. You just need the proof of vaccination. So that is the and the mayor sent out this thing. This is how insane it is. The mayor sent out a thing that said you only need one shot for the next month, so you can book your vaccine appointment at 5 and be out to dinner at 6. So this is now the quickest acting vaccine in the history of the university.
The mayor works in 1 hour.
It's complete madness. And by the way, D.C. peaked 2.5 weeks ago. D.C. peaked right at the beginning of the year, and COVID here has been plunging unbelievably. The graphs are basically going down vertically, and she imposes this now.
So this is what we see with tyrants and despots. And so put that over there. Then we're seeing what's happening in D.C. with this John Lewis Voting Rights Act, where they're saying that that if you have to provide a photo ID to vote, that it's racist. But yet, clearly in Washington, D.C., everybody would need a photo ID to just go out to a restaurant. That disconnect is just crazy to me, and the American people need to understand that. Your thoughts on that, Phil?
Look, more than half of the black population in the city hasn't taken any vaccines. And so, you know, the racial impact of this is absolutely massive. And it's not because they don't have IDs. That's the lie about voting. They have IDs. They don't have proof of vaccination because they've chosen not to get vaccinated. Now they're banished basically from indoor venues in the city indefinitely. There's no end date on this. If this crazy concept were on the right rather than on the left, it would be called fascism. It would be called racist. It would be blocked by the ACLU and judges immediately. But because this has occurred on the political left, there's silence on that aspect of it, which is really ridiculous and disturbing. And, you know, I keep seeing on social media posts from black people in D.C. saying, you know, oh, I'm not going to go and rest. I saw one that was like, my employer is enforcing this in the lunchroom at our work, so I'm going to have to eat at my desk from now on. I mean, this is like the madness that's happening. And they're doing it when these passport systems have completely failed. New York City has one. They had a massive Omicron wave. Spain is scrapping theirs because it completely failed. The UK is scrapping theirs because it completely failed. And in the U.S., they're spreading. They're implementing them in more cities. We're going to have it in the big suburban county outside of D.C., Montgomery County. They're voting a week from today. I'm sure they're going to impose it also. It has no basis in reality or any of the principles of kind of the American individual economic freedom system. It's completely alien to our legal and economic traditions. But the left has embraced it. And so in the areas they control, this is what's happening. And by the way, you know, tourism's going to end. Who's going to take their family to Chicago or New York or D.C. when they can't go inside anywhere?
Right, right. I used to go back to New York on a pretty regular basis. I have no desire to go back there now. And here in Denver, we had gone, and I've said this several times on the air, but during Christmas, I'd gone down to the area in Denver, Larimer Square, which used to be quaint, kind of Charles Dickens during the Christmas season. The place was dead. These policies are killing our cities because people are not going to go there. Phil Kirpin, this has been absolutely fascinating. We've got a couple of minutes left, and I'm encouraged with what you're doing. We all have to continue to shed light on this and search for truth. And I see that percentage of people continuing. I'm optimistic that percentage of people that would use this government to lock up their neighbors and a variety of things, I see that percentage continuing to decrease as we continue to shed light on this. You've got about a minute left. Phil, what's your final thought for our listeners today?
Well, I mean, we covered a lot of ground. I just think the main takeaway and the reason I'm doing these interviews on the hospital issue is just I'm telling people, watch the top line numbers. Don't assume headlines are telling the truth, because the vast majority of them, I see these headlines, this hospital's overwhelmed. I look up that hospital's utilization, it hasn't gone up at all. So I think that it's the phenomenon we were just talking about. They think that you'll behave better if they scare you and lie to you about what's happening in the hospitals, and it's just not true.
Well, it is the old thing about you lie to me once, shame on you. You lie to me twice, shame on me. And that is why it's so important for us to continue to search for truth and clarity. Where can people find you, Phil Kirpin?
AmericanCommitment.org is the website. I'm also on Twitter. It's my last name, Kirpin, K-E-R-P-E-N.
Okay, Phil Kirpin, I so appreciate you joining us today, and continue to shed light on all this. You're doing great work, so thank you.
All right. Bye.
It is so important, my friends, that we look at these issues, freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And America was founded on this idea of individual freedom. I was in a little Facebook back and forth regarding a post that a company had made about that was just very divisive. And I said that we have to remember the sovereignty of the individual. It is our own responsibility. It's our own freedom. As our friend Ben Martin always reminds us, that liberty is the responsible exercise of freedom. And that is what America was founded on. Our quote for today is from G.K. Chesterton. He says, "We do not need a censorship of the press. We have censorship by the press. It is not we who silence the press. It is the press who silences us." So today, my friends, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.